The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
The advice and opinions expressed by the host of Autism Live and her guests are meant solely as suggestion and should not be in any way construed as child-specific advice. Any choices you make in determining your child's treatment are completely at your own discretion.
Good morning, everybody. This is Shannon Penrod from Autism Live on the Autism Network, and we are at Cal ABBA today, second day Cal ABBA, and I'm going to be showing you the poster session. And if you're thinking to yourself, I don't know what she's talking about, oh, have you come to the right place? Because I get so excited about a good poster session. This is a graduate poster session, which means that people from all over the region who are graduate students who have been engaged in research in their last year have done some sort of research project. They've got some findings. They put them together on posters. The poster session has not started yet. It's not starting until 11:30, but we're sneaking in and going to get some pre-interviews as it starts, because you're going to hear it's going to get very loud in this convention hall. Because what happens is they present their research, like for instance, here's a poster. This is why they call it a poster session. And they get one board. Everybody gets one board. That's all you get. And you put your research findings there. And then a person who was a part of the research comes and stands there. And anyone at the conference can come up to them and ask them questions about their research. So I particularly love this because... oh, there's so many reasons. How do I wax poetic about this? I get so excited about this because this is where it's happening, right? These are the young, bright minds that are going to be working with your kids for the next few years and shaping what happens over the next generation. And these are the questions that they're asking. This is how they're asking the questions and how they're presenting them. So you know I love to talk to experts. I love to get them to speak back to me in a way that does not have jargon. So we're going to be asking as many people. I couldn't get pre-approval from everybody. So in the moment, we're going to be asking people if they're comfortable, which is going to be uncomfortable. So stick with me. But we're going to be finding out. Now, some of these things we're going to go, okay, you want some jargon, y'all? A parametric analysis of procedural integrity errors comparing the in-person and online modalities. Okay, well, I don't know what parametric analysis of procedural integrity is, but I know what in-person and online is. And I'm sure that that's going to be interesting to us, right? So we're giving them a second to get set up here. I know I'm going to want to hear about this one. There's one over there that I know is about getting parents to adhere to treatment. And how that we do that. So they're all sort of fascinating and you find out the most interesting things. But even better than that, I don't know. Is there anything better than information? I don't know about that. But I will tell you that what's super cool is meeting some of these people and seeing how passionate they are about making sure that the people that we love in our lives are getting proper teaching and that it's being done well, and that it's being efficient, and that it's effective. That jazzes me. I don't care, like the data stuff all hurts my head. And some of you will love the data and you'll love the graphs and all of that. But for me, I love that this is a gateway to progress. So I'm going to go and see if I can find one of our first people to present. Is this yours?
This one is ours.
I'm doing a live feed right now for Autism Live. You're not on camera yet, but would you like to be on camera and talk about your research, and I'll ask you a question? And it's okay if you say no, no one will ever know, because I don't have a camera phone. I know, I was trying to get here early to ask people. So I was just saying, this is a pretty intense topic. I don't know what parametric analysis of procedural integrity is. I'm a parent, and our viewers are parents, right? But I certainly understand what comparing in-person and online modalities is, and I could see where that would be important. So first of all, if you're willing to, can I put the camera on you? Okay, so hello and hello. Do you want to introduce yourselves?
My name is Leah Jones. I'm a grad student at Cal State Sacramento.
Okay. My name is Alan Bernard-Canton. I'm also a graduate student at California State University, Sacramento.
Fabulous. So who would like to stand by the poster and tell me what it was your question was, how you answered it, and what we need to know?
So originally we started this study before COVID hit. And initially we wanted to investigate how varying levels of procedural integrity affect skills that have been mastered previously with 100% integrity.
And I'm going to ask you to speak up as much as you can. So basically, you wanted to see if it's effective,
yes. How varying levels of treatment integrity affect skills that have previously been mastered. And we did this with a computerized match-to-sample test.
Okay.
However, the poster was slightly adapted because we started this pre-pandemic.
Oh.
And yeah, we started this in person.
You didn't know it, but you were ahead of your time, right?
Yeah, it fell into our hands, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, so we started this in person, and then we had to transition online. And this allowed for us to compare the data between the in-person and the online modalities.
Okay. And ultimately, what did you find? Because we all have been asking this. I think, I think we all sort of feel like in-person is going to be more effective, but is the online still effective?
Indeed. We did find that there was no difference in performance.
What?
Yes.
That's exciting.
Very exciting. And no difference in the number of trials the participants needed to reach mastery.
Okay.
Yeah.
You want to read it?
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
So pretty amazing. We have a baby who's joined us. And, you know, I'm like a dog and I go squirrel when there's a baby. So pretty remarkable. If there are people who are watching and are interested in getting more information about this, where would they find more information? Is there a place to go?
Yeah, our lab is called Performance Improvement.
And see if we can go on LTE. Because, now it's back, Traven says. Okay, all right. So sorry.
It's okay.
Hello! This is where I need to be, where I meet everybody. I'm doing a live feed right now. Oh, well, and then Traven, I can't even tell where anything is anymore. I've lost my place and everything.
Hey,
no, we lost it.
Nice
okay.
To meet you.
We're gonna go live again.
So,
because we just lost him. I'm so sorry. Oh, no, we're still live. I can't see it, Traven. Oh, yes. Can't wait to have you. Say hi. Apparently, we are still live. All right, Monday's guest. There we go. Okay, we are still live. All right. Kerfuffle, you know, all kinds of technical issues. But we're here with Jennifer Beers. Jennifer, I feel like you've been on Autism Live before, yes?
I have not.
What's up with that? That is inappropriate. I've certainly heard your name. Tell us who you are.
So I'm Jennifer Beers. I'm the Associate Department Chair of the Applied Behavior Analysis Programs at the Southern California campuses of the Chicago School.
Okay, and I'm going to ask you to be as loud as you can because we have masks and mics and everything. But it'll be easier when we go this way. So here is your poster session. I noticed you have little scan things that people want to know. Look at you. I'm going to look at that. Try to grab that, you guys, if you need some more. But okay. So tell us, is this just information here or is there something that you guys researched that you're presenting on?
Today we're just presenting information about our graduate programs. So we have a master's degree, we have a PhD, and we have a post-master's certificate in behavior analysis. We have three campuses, LA, Anaheim, and San Diego. So anyone's in.
But it's called the Chicago School.
Chicago School.
But it's in Southern California.
We also have a Chicago campus, we're associated with the Southern California campuses.
I'm going to put this here so people know. Fantastic. Really remarkable. Looks like you, look at all of this, you guys. Fantastic. So if somebody's wanting to learn more and get a degree in it, because if you're going to learn, you might as well get the degree, right? And the pieces of paper that go with it. Okay, remarkable. Thank you for being such a good sport through all the. You need to come on the show. Proper. Like when we do proper. All right. Thank you. All right, you guys can see it's heated up here. Everybody's now come out of the session and the posters are up and people are asking questions. Let's find somebody who's available to answer our questions. So, and you can see people are looking at the research. Are you available to talk?
I am, yeah, we can
do it. All right. So we have to start with the title, Effects of Omission and Commission Errors During TAC Training.
Yes.
Good luck with that, because that's all jargon here, right? So what in the heck does that, first of all, who are you?
Oh, hi, I'm Sharkina Tamrezi, and I am a grad student at Stan State. So,
I've never even heard of Stan State.
Oh, it's Turlock, Stanislaus State. Yes.
I did not know that. I don't know all the Cal States. My son is at Cal State Northridge. I have never heard of Stanislaus.
Central Valley.
How very fun. Well, very cool. Okay. So what does this mean?
All right. So what we're trying to look at is when you're teaching, you want to make sure you're implementing the teaching procedure with integrity. So you want to make sure you're following the procedure the way it's written. So there are two types of errors that a person can make, and it could be an error of omission, which means that the experimenter either forgets to implement something that was written in the program.
Okay.
And there's also an error of commission where they reinforce something that should not have been reinforced. So,
and that happens.
Yes.
It does happen.
Yep.
Parents, you know, we do it, but sometimes even our professionals do it because it's real life and things happen. So, but you were looking at how does that affect treatment overall?
Mm-hmm.
So what did you find?
So what we found was when you commit errors of commission, that leads to slower acquisition compared to high integrity and errors of omission in 5 of the 6 comparisons.
And you're reading that, I should
yes.
show that. So it's worse when you're committing an error of commission,
yes.
is that safe to say?
Yes.
And commission is when
you are reinforcing a incorrect response.
Oh, so that you just want to make sure that in training,
yeah.
then when we're teaching PTs, that yeah. we really are not reinforcing. And this is something parents, we're really, this is a problem that we have a lot, that we inadvertently reinforce something, that don't reinforce something or reinforce the wrong thing. So we really need to clean up our acts a little bit.
Yeah, you have to be careful with that one.
All right. Well, that's fascinating. Thank you so much for sharing. And a beautiful poster, too.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. Excuse me. So sorry. Lots of papers going on and people talking. Let's see if we can find somebody who's available.
to answer questions. I don't know. Is it me? I just think it's so exciting to see how excited everybody gets about this stuff. I don't know whose this is. That I don't see a person standing there. We want to talk to Thomas here in a second, but and you can just come up to the poster and read them, but I like to talk to the people. I like to get excited about what they're excited about and what they found. Is this yours? Okay. All right. Some people still haven't come out of their session to stand by their work. Is one of these yours? Hi. I'm live right now, but what's this something new? Do you want to talk later? Okay. Oh, thank you. Are you work in this field? Yes. But you still work in a field, right? Then you're helping kids, and I love that. I love it. All right. Hi. Now I'm meeting people that I know. Hi. I'm live right now on Facebook. Do you want to say hi?
Yes. Yeah. From YouTube?
Yes!
Yes! I just recognize your face.
Is one of these papers yours?
No.
What's up with that?
Not yet.
Soon though, right?
Yes.
Okay, well I'm telling our audience at home how great a poster session is.
It is very great.
Is this yours?
No, I wish.
Well, where is the person that's going to tell? Where is the author? I need to know. Thomas, are you available?
No.
All right. So everybody's so busy. And so Thomas, thank you for reminding me that you've been on the show before. Tell people who you are and what your thing is.
Oh, my thing. Yeah. So I'm Tom Higby. I'm a professor and department head in the Department of Special Ed at Utah State University. So I'm here today at Calaba to help recruit potential doctoral students.
Ooh, wonderful. And there's no place more beautiful than Utah.
I mean, there may be, but I haven't seen it yet.
There we go. And so what do you guys have going on at Utah State University that people really need to know about?
Well,
like, why should somebody come there? Let's break it down.
What I think is great about our program is that not only do we have a really strong applied behavior analysis program, which is in my department, but upstairs in the psych department, they have a really strong experimental behavior analysis program.
Ah.
So the advantage of that is you get to take coursework from professors in both places.
Love it.
So all of our students who are going to be training to be applied behavior analysts get to take coursework in experimental analysis of behavior, philosophy of behavior analysis, from high-level researchers like Tim Shahan, Amy Odom, and Greg Madden, big names in the experimental field.
Yeah.
And the cool part is their experimental students also get to train with the applied behavior analysis faculty. So there's really that kind of old-school training about both sides of the field, so people come out really well-balanced.
I love it, and I love Utah. I mean, I want to come to Utah sometime soon. I have so many friends in Utah. I don't know if you know this. I used to teach at BYU for a brief little moment.
Oh, great.
Not a mess, but...
We won't hold that against you.
Right?
BYU is one of our rival schools.
So I've lived there for a little while. Absolutely love it. I have lots of friends there. Taught in the theater department, so nothing to do with any of this. But I love Utah. There was a school in Utah that my son was applying to, but he chose another school. So I thought we were going to be living in Utah. And I was going to be okay with that.
It's a great spot. I like it. And you know, I live in California, too. And it's lovely. And Logan, in particular, is a really kind of small university town, about 100,000 people.
Yeah.
But if you like doing big city things, Salt Lake's only an hour away.
That's right.
And Salt Lake is an hour away from L.A. by plane. It's an hour away from San Francisco by plane. It's an hour away from Phoenix. It's an hour away from most places. It's a delta hub, so it's easy to get places.
And you can get to almost anything if you like the mountains, if you like water. It's all good. Thank you so much, Thomas.
Yeah, great to see you again.
You too. Bye-bye. Oh, right. Who are we going to next here, you guys? I'm out of breath. Everybody's so busy.
I know. Be careful. It's wet right here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That would have been terrible if I had slipped on my keister. I'm live right now. End of the thing. But this is why, thank you. This is why I recommend that you guys go to events like this, because look at the people we're meeting. Feel the passion. Feel the level of research and care and concern and thoughtfulness for even the most smallest thing. All right, we're going to start going up to some of the posters that don't have somebody. Is this your poster? It is. Were you willing to be on camera and talk about it? We're live right now on Facebook and YouTube and Twitter. It's okay to say no.
I'm going to take a deep breath and say yes.
Okay, look at you. Look at, that's fabulous. Being brave. So the paper is a comparison of visual stimulus presentation methods in TAC training. Now, my audience is mostly parents. So break that down for us. What does that mean?
So we compare just two different ways of presenting the stimuli. So in isolation versus in the context of an array, which might be more naturalistic for like the child's environment, you know, you're naming objects.
So what are you teaching here, spider?
Their names. We are teaching strange names because these kids are 5 and 6.
Okay.
So we're giving them, these are just unusual like plant and animal and fruit names. So we're teaching them Gucci and then we're teaching them Cashew.
Okay.
So what we found, we did pretty standard TAC training, which is just teaching them their name.
Yep.
And what we found across these two different...
let's define tacting, because I think a lot of people are confused about what tacting is.
Okay, so tacting is essentially naming the item. So it's, now that I see this stimulus, I'm going to name it, and I'm going to say it's a Gucci.
But it's a little bit different than just, like, it's got to be something new and novel, right? Like... the thing that I always say is that, like, if I just go up and say, you know, shoe, but if I'm pointing it out to you, like, there's something about the shoe that's attacked, right? Oh, we're going to get into it, aren't we? Because it's all jargon. What makes it attacked and not just labeled?
So it's, well, I mean, also you have an audience, so you're only going to point out my shoe because maybe I'm interested in it and I will give you social praise. So
it's a form of communicating it to another person. Yes. It's not just labeling, it's trying to communicate it to the other person. Okay.
And point it out to someone
else. So you're teaching them the name of this particular spider so that when they see it, they'll point it out to you.
Yes.
Okay, we're there. We got there. Okay. And so, the difference between doing it by itself or doing it in an array of three.
Right.
Okay, what'd you find?
So what we found was the children that we did this with had autism and they were ages 5 to 6.
Okay.
So what we found was this top panel here, the participant had very strong attending skills. He was really eager to show the experimenter that he knew it.
Okay.
He was really fun to work with. He had very strong attending skills, which means that the simultaneous wasn't like too difficult for him. And he actually did better in the simultaneous method, which is consistent with research with typical kids on the topic.
Yeah.
And then he did very similar. It was almost the same in the second comparison, but successive was mastered, or isolation was mastered technically a little faster, but it's...
Okay, but he got there either way.
Yeah, he got there either way. Second participant, though, he had more trouble with attending to the board and really, like, scanning that array. So I think it was kind of confusing for him, the simultaneous presentation, and so he met remedial criteria for the set that was taught in that format, so we had to retrain, we had to finish it up with the successive, because that's what he needed.
So, quiz me on this, I feel like then the takeaway is that it depends on the learner.
It really depends on the learner. Their prerequisite skills, but also it's an interesting question to be like, well, we should teach those prerequisite skills of attending and scanning, and maybe that is an interesting way to do that, or an interesting marker of like what they're ready for.
There you go. So if they are able to scan, that then it might be faster to do the array. But if they aren't, you got to go back and do that foundation.
Totally.
Fantastic. And tell us who you are and where you're with.
I'm Adrienne O'Neill, and I am at CSUS. I'm with Sac State at the Verbal Behavior Research
Wonderful.
Lab under Kyle McGill.
Thank you so much. This is fascinating. And you did good. You did good.
Thank you. I love your question.
Take care. The masked meerkats, incorporating elements of percentile schedule for reinforcement to shape mask wearing at non-public schools. Like, everybody wants to know about this one. Are you the person for this?
Sorry.
You are. Can I get you on camera?
Oh, sure.
So, okay, tell us, first of all, everybody's been coming here wanting to chat with you, because this is a pretty important topic, right?
I have this for you as well.
Okay. You're live right now on Facebook, YouTube, and So tell us what your name is.
My name is Tess Kirsten Ciago. I'm a clinical supervisor at our non-public school at Bright Horizons.
Okay.
I'm part of the Bright organization.
There's a Bright. There it is, you guys. So what do meerkats...
Yes, that is our school mascot.
Okay, we thought you were really talking about meerkats. But it's so, okay, so at a particular school, you were looking at how... a percentile schedule of reinforcement can shape mask wearing.
Yes.
I don't know what percentile schedule of reinforcement is, nor do my audience, so you're going to have to tell us.
All right. So we actually use a modified percentile of reinforcement, sorry. And it is a... So it's used for response shaping, and it's a mathematical equation. So... it's very precise. The modified version that we use, because typically they are, it's daily. So you would adjust the criteria daily, but we did ours weekly, which is also a limitation that we found.
Okay.
So, but given our classes and our students at a non-public school, it wasn't really feasible at the time to do it daily.
Can I back up for just
a
second? So it sounds like what you were doing is checking in with them on a weekly basis to see if they were wearing their masks, and if they were, they got reinforcement.
So here's what happened. The students would arrive to school. If they are wearing their mask, their RBT would start the timer, their duration, their rate timer, and they would also start a mask wearing duration. If the mask fell below their nose or mouth and they did not move it up once they were prompted to, we would stop the duration timer.
Right.
And we would prompt them and say, okay, you need to put your mask up. It's not safe, right?
Yeah. Tess, can you do this with my husband?
Oh, yes. I can teach him.
Honey, if you're listening.
Basically, we would reinforce them with every meeting. We have little morning meetings and closing circles, and we would give them praise and say, hey, who met their goal today? And whatever every student had an individualized duration based on where their level was at.
Right.
So with the percentile schedule, we would collect the data from the whole week, and then we would arrange it least to most, and then we'd grab the top 50th percentile of those durations, and that would be their next criteria for the next week.
Okay.
So let's say the student's average of the top...
So you're moving the goalposts for them.
Yes, we are.
I got it.
Yes, and then...
you weren't basing it on the group, you were basing it on the individual person. How did you do? We're going to make it a little tougher for you next week.
Yes, and then...
Totally with you.
However, let's say they wore their mask for 2 hours one day, but then the rest of the week they only kept it on for 10 minutes at a time, then their average would be lower.
Right.
So then we'd have to move it down for them, be like, okay, well, you have to meet this week's new criteria, and then you have to, and then if you do for 2 weeks in a row, then they'd master it, and they would earn a mask meerkat, or they'd earn a meerkat mask. So it's a mask with a meerkat on it.
So they like it.
And some of the kids loved it, So we actually had 50% of the students said that they loved it.
And for the 50% that didn't love it, did you find something else?
So actually, we spoke to the students, and they're like, you know, I liked it, but I wish we earned toys instead of masks. But we were trying to keep motivating them to wear the mask. So we're like, you get your own cool mask.
Right.
And they got to choose between different, meerkat. There were pictures. Some of them were meerkats in space, and some of them were just cute little baby meerkats. It was really adorable. But as the students earned their masks, there was less variety. So that gave them more motivation to earn their own, because they're like, well, I wanted that one. If you meet your goal, you get to pick your own.
Fantastic. And you found that this worked at maintaining the mask wearing.
Yes, and so even students who didn't meet their goal in given here with our graphs, they eventually did, and then they maintained their mask wearing duration and increased it throughout the school day, which was, this was during summer school, so it was a 4-hour day.
Right.
For most of the students, one of our students had, I don't know if this one's on here, I don't think she is, but she only had a half day, so her hours were different. She only had to be at school for 2 hours rather than 4. So her duration levels were different, but she still was able to meet her mask mirror, her duration.
Fantastic. So it feels like what you're saying is they each got to run their own race, they were reinforced for it, and it worked.
Exactly.
All right. We like it. Thank you so much.
Yes, of course.
There it is. We didn't know what it was when we first saw it, but now we know. Don't we love a good poster session? Thank you. Is this yours?
Yes.
Can I talk to you?
Yes.
All right. So you're on camera right now, and we're live on YouTube, Twitter, Periscope. Not Periscope anymore. No, Periscope is so 1999. Anyway, tell us your name.
Hi, my name is Michelle Bonilla.
You're going to have to talk really loud because it's mask and, okay, and crazy amount of people here. But I'm going to show them the title first. Parental ABA Treatment Adherence, a self-report survey to identify relevant variables. Now, most of the people in my audience are parents.
Okay.
So yours is relevant to us. So what did you consider treatment adherence?
So treatment adherence is what we would consider as participation and having the buy-in, really, for any parent goals that we're putting in front of our parents.
You're a team player. You're
yeah,
getting
exactly.
it done. You're doing what your team asks you. You're,
right.
Right? Okay.
Yeah. And how do we treat our parents as part of the team? And so what we came up with was a survey to really try to identify any variables that may be conflicting with perhaps any goals that we might have already written. And so what we want to do is make sure that we're considering anything that may really come into play with parent adherence.
Whatever's gumming it up, right?
Right. So we
come over here with me because I want to be showing this but have you talk about. So here are some of the things that you were asking. I'm going to try there. It's really small.
Yeah.
And I'm old. I have spent significant amounts of time with children with autism. And so they would say whether they agreed or disagreed. Outcome-wise, what did you find? There's so many questions here. I'm not going to go through all of them. But what did you find is gumming it up for parents?
Yeah, I mean, outcome-wise, we would say that there were certainly questions that came to that had percentages that were varied. So it really painted the picture of, yes, there are individual barriers that we do need to address on an individual basis. So we can't just come up with a cookie-cutter one-size-fits-all program because, for example, the one that you're looking at now, or let's say I do not have enough time to attend to all my child's needs. So it's varied, you know,
yeah.
So it really just shows us that we're not going to be able to come up with like the 30-hour plan for every parent. Not every parent is going to have enough time to work on that outside of session. And so we want to make sure that we are catering to our parents' needs and their individual needs more specifically.
Fantastic. Well, I love when ABA companies are talking to the parents and going, what's holding you up? Like, because then once we know what it is, we can work on it, right?
We want to make goals accessible and not so out of the scope of how our parents are starting off with our services. We want to make sure that, that we're starting from where they are, and we want them to really be a part of the team.
I love this question here. I think it is possible that ABA programming might be overkill for my child's needs, but 58% said that they strongly disagreed. That's good.
Good.
And 42% said that they disagree. That's good. That's where it should be. And nobody said anything else. You got good parents.
Yeah,
tell them I said so.
Parents.
Tell them I said so, okay? All right. Thank you so much. Take care. Hello. Go ahead. Talk to her. It's just craziness here. Crazy, craziness. Who have we not talked to? There are a couple of, this one's been really popular. Oh, preference assessments in the workplace. Very cool, but we don't necessarily need to know that today, do we? And there I go, just showing you another place that where ABA is not all about autism, right? They're talking about how to, here's knowledge about graduate school increased only after completing relevant modules. So lots of things here that aren't necessarily, there's one about substance abuse. Here's one about prerequisite training. I think you guys, we've hit all the ones that have to do with autism. But I will tell you that this is an amazing poster session. There's not a thing in the world wrong with this poster session. It's just when you go to some of the bigger conferences when it's not in COVID, this would be a football field long. And the first one that I ever went to, I there was no way you could get through it in a day. It was like Disneyland. And some, and you, you know, you kind of have to, there's usually they print out a thing and you can see all of the topics and circle the ones you want to go to, and it tells you what number it is. So if there's something that you've been interested, like maybe your child is engaged in a behavior that you don't know what to do and your team's a little up a tree, and maybe somebody's done research on that particular thing, you go to one of these ABA events. This one is CALABA. It's a regional conference, but you go to one of these events, you see what the poster sessions are, and then you circle the numbers that you want to go to, and you get there. This is a much smaller one. It is the first event out of COVID, so it was to be accepted, expected that it would be small, but it's still pretty mighty. And we learned some really good stuff. Like the big takeaway for me, I'm sorry, I just keep pacing. The big takeaway for me is that online and in person are comparable. So that was kind of cool. All right, you guys, I have to go be on a panel that we're going to be talking about neurodiversity and ABA. And I'll be representing a lot of you parents as the parent voice about making sure that ABA professionals aren't using ableistic speech and talking in a way that would make us feel that our children are anything other than the amazing people that they are. So I'm really excited to be representing all of you. And I'll let you know on Monday how that all goes. On Monday's show, we're going to have Kelly Birmingham and Jen Lucero, who's been on. Jen's been on the show many times before, but we've never had Kelly on. They're doing a fantastic podcast as a parent and as a BCBA about autism. So if you're loving Autism Live, you're going to love their podcast as well. I'm going to sign off and get over to my talk, but I sure appreciate you guys being with us. I know we had some audio issues, but hopefully you found something that was interesting. If nothing else, look around the room and see all the people who are working so hard every day to help the people that we love and to find ways to do it better. It's a pretty awesome site, yeah? All right, much love to all of you. I'll see you on Monday. Wish me luck on the panel. Bye-bye for now.